This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been online now for more than a decade, writing about and filtering the BS in the digital signage industry. Now it's also a podcast, a chance to talk to smart people doing interesting things in this business. You can listen to episodes online, grab it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to grab the RSS feed. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. This week, it's all about advertising. I'm talking to Ken Salin, the CEO of Do Media, a Columbus, Ohio company that's in the business of putting together media buyers and sellers using software. Ken talks about how the company has developed a set of cloud-based applications that make media planners aware of out-of-home media they can use, and then takes a lot of the pain out of the buying and execution process using slick tools. We talk about Do Media's roots, the reason it went into stealth mode for a few years, and how last year the company saw 450% growth. If your digital signage business touches on ad dollars, you'll want to have a listen. So, Ken, I'm familiar with Do Media, but for those who are listening to this podcast who don't know much about the company, can you give me a background about who you are, what you do, and where you came from?
Yeah, certainly, Dave, and it's a pleasure speaking with you today. Do Media actually launched in 2008, and we launched with an open marketplace, and the goal of that was really to address the fragmentation challenges in the out-of-home and digital place-based industries. Today, we're a centralized cloud-based resource that was, and still is to be honest with you, a free-to-search and a free-to-post place for buyers and sellers of out-of-home and digital place-based media to connect. This was a fundamental industry challenge back in 2008, and it's one that I think Do Media has solved, and it's obviously had some long-standing success. Dave, I mean, you probably remember back in 2008, most of the largest out-of-home companies were really reluctant to put locations of their inventory in an open marketplace like Do Media. And we still, to this day, we remain unique in that we're still open. Virtually anyone can come to the Do Media website and they can search for media in a market of their choice. And I think also very importantly to note is we're independent. We're a technology company. We have no ownership or no bias to the demand or the supply side of the industry. And that's really important, we feel, to be a trusted source of industry information, obviously.
So there's been some roadkill, so to speak, in the effort to kind of roll up a lot of out-of-home companies and their inventory. Like, I'm thinking specifically of Accentricity and Seesaw, and I know RView is still around, but I'm not quite totally sure what they're doing. What made it different for you guys?
Well, I think the term roll-up or aggregation was one that, depending on the company or the business model you might be referring to, some of those companies actually did try to buy or sell media. We don't aggregate inventory, we aggregate information. We try to distill it down for the users of the Do Media platform and applications. And I think that was a very smart decision on our part. Again, we're independent. We don't buy, nor sell, nor influence planning or buying decisions. We're really just a technology company that's trying to simplify the process of planning and buying all kinds of out-of-home media. And I think that's the difference in Do Media's case.
And how then, if it's free to search and free to post, how do you make money?
Sure. Well, the basic search and posts, again, I think that's fundamental to a marketplace. But we do have applications for expert buyers. I think, you know, one of the things that we did years ago is we kind of looked at ourselves as an expert tool. And I think what we really quickly found out is that the industry, especially back in 2008, 2009, didn't really need an expert tool, it needed a tool for experts. So from the marketplace, which, you know, when we launched in 2008 with maybe about 100 media companies listed, some of our agency users that we started talking to back then said, you know, hey, you've got all these companies, I need some tools or some applications to help sort through this stuff. So we started down a path of developing those applications that if you are an agency buyer today, you can use those tools. And those tools tend to come with, obviously, a cost.
Okay. So it's kind of like a Ticketmaster fee, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we're a little bit different. Today, we really don't focus on a SaaS model. It's really what we call a technology service fee model. The other way I look at it, it's a success fee-based model. We don't want the industry to be constrained by seat licenses, which many SaaS models are. We'd like everybody and anybody in an agency or a media operator to have access to our applications and be able to use it. So really, you know, use it as much as you want. When you conduct business, know that there is going to be a technology service fee involved.
Okay. So if I'm remembering Do Media's history a little bit, going back 5-6 years, maybe you had a deal with Starcom and you sort of became their in-house system. Is that accurate?
Well, I want to be clear. First of all, you know, we're not owned, nor does, you know, Starcom or the SMG, Starcom Media Best Group, have any ownership in Do Media. Right. They were one of the first ones to kind of share our vision for, you know, how to simplify the planning and buying process and selling process for that matter as well in the industry. So I think I'd look at them as our beta users. Today, they remain, you know, very solid users of our platform and applications. They've given us tons of great feedback, obviously. The applications have come a long way. In addition, you know, today we enjoy, you know, very good working relationships with all media companies in the industry, big as well as small. And additionally, over the past couple of years, when we really got to the point where the demand side platform or applications got to a point where we could take them to other agencies, we've actually been doing that over the past couple of years. And this year in particular, we found a kind of a sweet spot with a lot of mid-tier agencies. And we think that's kind of opening the doors for the industry to a lot of users, agency users in particular, that might, again, found out-of-home and digital play space to be difficult to plan and buy. So we're putting information in their hands, and we're giving those experts some tools to promote digital play space and out-of-home to their clients. Because in the past, I think they've been a little afraid to approach it because it was, again, very fragmented, very non-standardized.
Is it a challenge as a media planner in an agency to have multiple tools? So let's say I want to do an out-of-home buy, and there's 4 or 5 different platforms out there that I theoretically would have to log into and use, all with different user experiences and everything, to complete a buy. Is that a problem that's trying to resolve itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a problem that companies like Do Media are trying to resolve. What, you know, we consider that to be as one of the core value props of our service and our applications, and that is eliminate all these point solutions. These point solutions generate a lot of inefficiencies and redundancies. It's moving data from one point solution to the other. So a platform and application like Do Media, if you're an agency, you can search the industry's most comprehensive database. You can see locations on a map. You can generate an RFP. You've got all the media companies and your reps attached to those companies that you can send the RFP to. And when you negotiate and get proposals back from them, you can throw those proposals on a map and then seamlessly move it to contracting. So it's a very streamlined process right now in platforms like Do Media.
So I'm sorry, what do you mean by point solution?
So it's exactly what you were referring to, Dave. A planner might have to, you know, go to a planning system like Telmar to try to figure out if they were trying to reach some kind of audience delivery goal or objective. They put some information in and see what types of operators were in a given market and maybe a rough estimate on how many boards they might have to buy to reach a certain audience delivery. Then they might go to email or Excel first. Go to Excel and create a proposal template. Then send an email out to 5 or 10 vendors and attach that email template to them. And when the vendors send back their Excel templates, they probably changed those templates. And that meant that the buyer had to kind of normalize or standardize those templates back into one so that they could compile all the different proposals into one spreadsheet on their desktop so that they could evaluate it. And then they'd have to move into a mapping system, which would be yet another system. And then when the whole thing was hopefully done and negotiated, they'd have to literally transcribe, key punch, whatever that final buy might be, into a contracting system. So, you know, I think I just described 4 different systems or applications right there that we're trying to put into one integrated platform.
So like every industry that starts off with a whole bunch of different platforms that you have to kind of weed your way through, I would assume the aspiration here is to become the or one of the de facto platforms that if you're making an out-of-home buy, you would just use Do Media.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're trying to do and we've been trying to do since we started was really bring, you know, standards to this industry. And I want to be clear, we don't set standards. I think we facilitate the adoption of standards. So the Traffic Audit Bureau, which is right now rebranding themselves as Geopath, they've developed a rating system for all their member operators. They're actually improving that right now and layering on some new digital technologies like mobile data on top of that. And through a license that we have with Geopath now, we incorporate that into our platform. And, you know, I think that helps drive adoption and use in the, across the entire industry. If we become the standard, Dave, that'd be fantastic, obviously, especially for our investors. But I think really what we and others are trying to do right now is, you know, create that standardization and that data structure.
Is it also a challenge when you've got all these programmatic buying services out there, the demand side, supply side, and so on, that use the same kind of language and everything else as you do to kind of distinguish yourself?
Yeah, I think right now one of the things that, you know, we've kind of put out there is we've got to be really careful as a technology company in this space. You know, I think there's a very strong argument that there's not a true programmatic solution out there today for out of home. There's a lot of progress being made. The DPAA right now, we recently just rejoined the DPAA because they've undertaken an initiative to, again, create the foundation for standards and data structure to move along further along the path of automation of processes towards programmatic. And I think we've all got to be careful not to say that we are programmatic when you compare what's being done today in out-of-home or digital play space to what's being done in digital, because there are various shades of programmatic. And again, we don't want to mislead, I think, as an industry, agencies or brands to what our capabilities are. But certainly, I think today, you know, again, you probably remember back in 2009, we actually developed a programmatic algorithm. We brought it to the marketplace, and we were way ahead of the curve at that point in time. And today, it's really, most people would not, say it's a matter of if, it's really a matter of when.
And when we're talking about programmatic, do you see the time when you will not only be able to facilitate a buy, but be able to facilitate what's appearing on the digital screen, the digital billboard, based on live data that's coming from audience or mobile data and all those sorts of things?
Absolutely. A lot of those pieces are in place right now. Do Media, you know, our database architecture is really set. Things that we'll build in the future is ad serving, obviously. That's not something that we do today, but others haven't. Getting that mobile data and that other third-party data so that you can actually, you know, literally follow the path of a consumer through a day, that information is becoming more available. I think one of the challenges that the industry faces is trying to, again, kind of standardize. And really, I think we've got to look to the brands. You know, what third-party data, you know, what big data are they going to trust? Because today there are different mobile data sources out there. And I think it's important that the industry, you know, kind of understands from the brand what they believe in. Because a common currency is absolutely required, not only from a ratings perspective, but from an audience measurement perspective as well.
You've been around for a number of years. You kind of went a little quiet, at least from my perspective, for a while there. And then last year, you started to bubble up. And when I was looking through some of your press materials, it said you grew by 450% in 2015. Like, what happened?
Well, I think we've been in stealth mode for, you know, by design for many years. You know, again, after we launched that programmatic offering back in 2009, you know, we listened to the market. And the market at that point in time really wanted an automation of that current email, Excel spreadsheet, PowerPoint process. So we spent a lot of time with our agency partners fine-tuning that, kind of building a best of breed. And then over the past couple of years, adding on a contracting application, dynamic mapping, RFP and proposal applications, that's when I think we really hit our stride. It was probably about 2 years ago that the technology really took a leap forward. And, you know, that resulted in some significant adoption and growth in 2015.
So what in effect happened is that they were looking at you and saying, that's great that you've got all the inventory and the capability to expose that, but the whole process is a pain in the ass. Please fix that.
Yes. And I think the industry, you know, it's a big industry. It moves slowly. It has to be careful when it contemplates change. And I think one of the things that the digital world has taught everybody, and, you know, it's kind of one, and I didn't coin this, so I won't take credit for it, but you need to be able to buy, you know, media at 2 a.m. in your pajamas. You shouldn't necessarily have to wait for a phone call to get rates or see where locations might be. Today's buyers in most agencies, I mean, they're millennials. They are at work at 2 a.m. They're at work at 10 p.m. on a Friday night. They need access to information. And I think really over the past few years, it's become really clear to all media formats that they need to provide that capability. And, you know, At a Home right now, it's really, you know, At a Home, digital play space, it's all part of At a Home. It's going through a renaissance right now. I think now more than ever, it's right on line with consumer trends. People are spending more time out of home. The Outdoor Advertising Association of America actually has done some research. They found that At a Home is 3 times more efficient than TV, radio, and print at driving online search activity. So you can picture that millennial in Times Square or any other mall in America seeing a digital place-based ad and then going to their mobile device and engaging with that brand or that retailer, you know, online and or mobily.
How much of your inventory is actually digital right now? Because I think if I'm remembering looking at the inventory, there's a, you know, fair amount of analog stuff there.
There's well over 150 digital place-based companies that are currently in our marketplace. And then today, when you look at the traditional at-a-home operators, I believe there's over 6,000 digital bulletins in the U.S., according to the OAAA, and all of those are represented in the marketplace.
So if you did $1 billion in transactions last year, what percentage of that would have been digital?
That'd be over the past couple of years, really. We hit that $1 billion in 2015. But I think we're in line with industry trends. I'd say it's a good 10 to 15%, Dave.
And that's on a growth curve?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, the DPA, I think we're right in line with the DPA in terms of the growth trends and potential that they see.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 69 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now, back to the podcast.
Now, I'm like a lot of people in digital signage, somebody who's at one point or another been involved in a digital out-of-home network. I ran one and I launched one and learned some lessons like a lot of people around that. Are there networks that seem to work, that seem to get the buys versus ones that just don't ever seem to really get the traction?
You know, Dave, I think I've got to be careful when I comment on that because the insight that I see, obviously, for, you know, the transactions through our platform are very confidential. But I think it goes to say, you know, in any medium or any business, really, I think that the companies that have a really focused goal, tactics, in our business, I think, as you know, it's all in the numbers. Most of our agencies today are large agencies. They buy, you know, top 10, top 15 DMAs. So I think coverage in those DMAs is really, really important. But at the same point in time, I think one of the other benefits of digital play space as well as out of home is the targetability that it offers. And we're seeing more and more agencies who have very specific hyper-local needs look into a market. So even that small network, we encourage them, even if you're in a couple of markets, to, you know, post your, you know, your company, post your inventory in a marketplace like Do Media, because you never know when a big agency, a local advertiser, or a regional agency is going to pop into our marketplace and look for your offering.
The health sector, point of care health, that sort of thing, has always been pretty successful in terms of digital out of home. Same with office environment. The ones that I've seen struggle endlessly are and I understand you don't want to slam them or anything, but C-stores, those sorts of hyper-local initiatives just never seem to work. Do you have some on the network and are they working?
We have several. I would say the ones that we've seen, you know, a little bit of traction are the ones that have a desirable demographic, you know, off the top of my head, Hispanic audiences, obviously. I think a lot of advertisers are interested in them, and there are some networks that I think fit that bill.
Before they all get deported, right?
we just provide the place, Dave.
I'm curious about the whole idea of demand side versus supply side. Can you explain one versus the other?
Yeah, actually, they're kind of the mirror image of one another. And as we, again, I think, continue to evolve to a true DSP and SSP, you know, much like the digital platforms are today, if you're on the DSP side, you've got all your media companies. Today, there's about 1,000 media companies in our marketplace. You have a place to solicit proposals. You have a place to retain proposals. and also contract them as well. Given that, again, most of out-of-home today is static, we ad serving is not something that we specialize in, obviously. But again, that's something on the technology roadmap, clearly. On the supply side, just like an agency makes recommendations to their clients, clearly an operator is making proposals to their agency buyers and or their direct advertisers as well. A lot of operators deal with local advertisers. So for them to be able to access their inventory out of an inventory management system per se, and then propose that along with a map and potentially photo sheets, audience ratings, etc., to an advertiser or an agency, that's what a supply side platform will do. And of course, when negotiations are finalized, you finish with contracting, which again is part of our supply side platform. And again, we're on a path to continue to automate this towards programmatic as the industry is ready to adopt that.
So if I'm a digital out-of-home network operator, I've established a network in 10 top markets and doing something or other. How do I plug into Do Media?
Well, it's easy to register, and there's no cost, as I said earlier. Build a company profile. You can describe who you are, what you do, where you do it. You can upload media kits. You can upload white papers if you have any, your logo, obviously. And then you can move to creating what we call product or inventory profiles. And you can take, you can keep that at a network level. You can keep it at a market level. You can take it down to a lat long or specific screen level if you'd like. We certainly encourage the highest level of granularity possible, because at the end of the day, you do have some buyers that are looking to buy large networks across your 10 DMAs in your network, Dave, or they might be looking for a specific zip code or a 2-mile radius around some trading area of a business or a brand, obviously. So the more information, the better.
Are you going to do better if you have some sort of analytics that will talk about audience impressions, traffic flow, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I think we've seen that over the years, obviously. Accountability is what brands are demanding more and more of. And again, I think that's a challenge that the industry is still facing. A lot of the digital place-based networks, they use Nielsen, obviously. That's in contrast to a lot of the traditional operators and out-of-home who use Geopath, obviously. Mm-hmm. But again, the point is that you have to have third-party measurement. That brings that credibility, and they're looking for not only, audience counts, but obviously audience composition.
And if I am starting out, and I get these phone calls almost every week from companies saying, we're going to start doing this.
Right.
And they say, what should I charge for advertising? And I say, oh boy, you're really early stage, aren't you? At this point, how is it measured? Is it still a CPM model or is it something else?
Yeah, I think you always have to be prepared to answer that question from a potential buyer, be it a brand or an advertiser, on what the CPM is. And there are published ranges. I mean, the industry trades put those out there. Again, one of the benefits of our industry is, we can be both a mass as well as a very targeted medium at a very cost-effective rate. So, most networks will sell against that. But I think the other thing, as I mentioned earlier, just the size of your audience and then the uniqueness of your audience, and then tailoring the demographics or audience profile that you have. And many networks have multiple profiles. They have a couple of sweet spots, obviously. But to really make sure when you take that to a brand or an agency that you're highlighting your sweet spot and you're backing that up with the analytics or the ratings that you have from that third-party source.
So I'm listed on Do Media. What am I going to get if there's a buy? Do I get like an email with an insertion order or what happens?
Well, it depends on who might be, seeing you or finding you. Most of our business right now is some of the larger and mid-tier agencies. Again, they're working on plans for their clients. So they might do a search by market and or by category and or by audience, and hopefully they find you. And when they read about you, they're intriguing enough to them, obviously, because you have such a great audience, Dave, that they will actually include you in an RFP. And when they get your proposal back, you'll be considered with other operators that have provided competitive quotes. Hopefully, because Dave, I know your network is so good, you'll rise to the top. The client will, or the agency will, make a recommendation to their client, and hopefully you actually get that buy, and that contract would come back to you through really a supply side dashboard, which is what we have for networks like yourself. Now, you can also potentially receive a request for a quote. It could come from a logged in agency user at Do Media. It could come from the floral shop down the street that is now being run by the owner's daughter, and she's very tech savvy, and she's read about your network in the fitness centers that you're in, Dave, and she really likes that demographic, and she's reaching. She was searching at 2 a.m., as I mentioned before, and she's looking to put together a Valentine's Day campaign for her flower shop. And she might reach out to you and say, hey, Dave, I love your network. Can you please send me some information or a quote? And you can connect directly with her. And our platform allows for that as well.
But it's not going to arrive automatically. It's not going to just pop in a container on in your schedule that you've got a placeholder. And if it's valid, an ad's going to start showing up. It's you're going to get an order. There's an agreement in place. And somebody's going to schedule this into your system.
Yeah, for the most part, availability and pricing are things that need to be confirmed by a network like yourself back to a prospective buyer before an insertion order or contract can be made. I think what you described, Dave, is where, you know, a lot of the industry would like to see it go. And again, I described being able to buy media at 2 a.m. in your pajamas. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the industry would like to meet in terms of a demand.
Yeah, well, they're kind of growing accustomed to that in online, so I'm sure they just expect, well, doesn't that work like that with all medium?
That's why, importantly, I kind of said it's the daughter of that floral shop owner. She's running that business right now.
So just to continue with this idea of Dave's network, if you want to use that example, should I expect this to be the lion's share of my advertising revenue, or is it supplemental, complementary, or is it kind of like remnant advertising and I need a sales staff? Because I think that mistake is also made that, well, I'll get somebody like Do Media to sell my ads and we're done here.
Right. You know, Dave, we've taken many calls over the years, just like you have. And that's probably one of the first things we say is we are not a sales force. We are not a broker. We are not an exclusive rep. We today, as we continue to build our demand side user base, obviously, you know, we're a great tool for you. We're something that can supplement you. And today we have some of the largest agencies in the country utilizing our platform. But I don't think it's a substitute for, especially, you know, if you're in the top 10 DMAs, as you described, you've got to develop relationships at the large agencies. I think that's a clear need. Now, when that agency goes to create a plan 2 months after they've met you, hopefully they're going to see you and remember the great impression that you made upon them. And they're not going to remember exactly what markets or how many screens you have, but all that information is at their fingertips in a platform like Do Media.
One thing that has intrigued me about your company is it kind of plays against this whole idea that if you're going to be in the media business, you have to have an office in New York on Madison Avenue or something. You guys are in Columbus, Ohio. And it doesn't seem to have affected you at all. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's a very fair assessment. First, we do have people on the street in both New York and Chicago. And I think it's not a matter of if, but when we have an office in New York in particular. But, you know, we're backed by some really great venture backers. And they, quite honestly, I think have shown a light on, an interesting value prop that the Midwest offers, and that is there's a lot of great people here. There's a lot of really smart technologists. I would put our technology team up against anybody on either coast. Our technology team is here. They are not offshore. They're brilliant people, some brilliant entrepreneurs here as well. Our core team's been together for 8 years, and I think we're proving that you can build not just a great company, but a great technology company here. And many other companies are starting to see that as well. Columbus has actually got a great entrepreneurial ecosystem being developed.
And you have a pretty good football team, and apartments don't cost $3,000 a month.
The apartments are starting to get up there, especially downtown Columbus, Dave. It's I'm from New York. I've lived in Columbus 20 years. It's been a great place to raise a family. I still love visiting New York. I get there a couple times a month. And even though I'm not a Buckeye, it's fun to live in a Big Ten town.
So one last question. Where do you see things at in your end of the industry, both for your company and for the industry at large over, let's say, the next 2 years?
Well, I definitely see the automation continuing to increase and close the gap on programmatic. I think it's up to the industry operators as well as the demand side players to see how fast that moves. There's lots of, you know, traditional concerns around losing control of inventory and pricing integrity, obviously, as well. And I think that's going to be the major, contributor or driver to how fast we continue to move towards programmatic. But, you know, I think there's lots of bright people out there that are bringing data structure, standardization, and really easy to use cloud-based interfaces to the industry. So I don't think it's as much of a technology challenge as it is change and, you know, just getting everybody comfortable with this. And at the end of the day, what I really think that technology and programmatic offerings, you know, offer to the industry, especially the supply side of the industry, is increasing inventory utilization and also increasing margin where you can prove that your audience is just so spot on with a specific advertiser's demographic objectives.
All right. Ken, thank you very much for your time.
Dave, pleasure as always, sir.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. 16.9, the blog, and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.